Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And Sonia, today we are jumping back into Season 3, the 19th episode of Season 3, the 45th overall, The Juggernaut Returns. So last week we talked about X-Men 2, the X-Menning, the X-Men United. Mm-hmm. But now we're back to talking about this cartoon. How does it feel?
Very good.
Oh, really? Yeah, it is actually nice to return.
Yeah.
X-Men 2 was really long, and then it was equally long to talk about.
Yeah.
So those episodes take a lot out of us. These are a little more cookie bite-sized, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
Yep.
So this episode sees the return of our old friend Juggernaut, if the title didn't give it away. Mm-hmm. And it's really more of a fun, like, Professor X backstory episode.
Yeah.
If you ever want to know what Professor X was like from ages 10 to 13.
He was a blonde, short shorts wearing, timid young man.
Yeah, a real blonde, rich ninny boy. Uh-huh. And his stepbrother, Kane Marco, was like a redheaded, like...
Bully.
Bully, howdy-doody looking guy. So we'll get into all that as we jump in here. I want to first talk about my impressions of this episode. I've probably only seen it once, or not once. I've seen it a few times throughout the years, but just rewatching it now, it's nice compared to the previous few episodes we saw. It's like a return to form.
Yeah.
It's back in the right animation studio.
Mm-hmm.
The story pacing is that, like, perfect X-Men story pacing we've come to know and love.
Mm-hmm.
There's the right amount of humor. There's really nice Easter eggs, Marvel Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, some other Easter eggs in there we're going to talk about. There's just, like, some fun, like, scenes of the X-Men in weird locations you wouldn't expect them to be in.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of a lot of, like, nice, just, like, detail about the X-Men world.
Yep.
And it's stuff that I really have enjoyed about Season 3, actually, that we've got a lot of nice coloring around the edges of the X-Men world. Although we've had some big, like, arcs, like Phoenix and Dark Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
this is a long season. There's over 20 episodes, so it's not about, like, one entire storyline like Season 1 and Season 2 were.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like, this is the X-Men world, and, you know, here's some adventures happening. And it's like a nice, like, mix compared to, like, a straight serialization.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons why I appreciate Season 3, and why I'm going to be sad to see it go in a few weeks once we're done with it.
Yeah. Although, we have a little while left.
Yeah, we still have, like, three more episodes after this one, I think.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, this is, like, a nice little fun episode, you know? There's nothing too crazy about it.
It reminds me a lot of the episode where we get some of Scott's backstory, where he goes to the orphanage where he was raised. Mm-hmm. Like, the pace is similar,
yeah.
And, like, the revelations are of a similar type, except it's, like, Professor X brand.
Right, and this one just has better quality.
Yeah.
So, like I said, a return to form. You know, like I said, this episode's about the origin of Juggernaut, basically. If you ever wondered, like, what his deal is, this big lumbering oaf of a overpowered supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the episode opens, they're essentially with this, like, nerd man who I don't even think we catch his name in the episode. I was listening for it.
Yeah, I didn't catch it either.
And he's just, like, your classic mid-90s nerd. Sort of in the Stephen Urkel mold.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the oversized like glasses that weren't yet hipsterized yet.
Mm-hmm.
His clothes don't fit him just right. He's real whiny and annoying and is clueless around women and just thinks that strength equals popularity. A very non-subtle take on a nerd man.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, culturally accurate, because it was not cool to be a nerd in the 90s.
Right.
As our fellow nerd friends might remember if they're old enough. You know, liking all this stuff, like X-Men and comic books, it was not popular then to really like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might have been popular, like, on the margins of, like, adolescence, in a sense. You know, no one would have... I don't think I ever got insulted for bringing an X-Men comic book to school. And kids might have said, oh, that's cool.
Well, because you had nerd friends, because you were a nerd.
I did, but even still, it's not like I was waving around this... It was not like I was waving around a pocket protector kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like... It's, you know, comic books are always going to be pretty cool amongst adolescent boys.
Okay.
I don't know about girls so much. That's a different story. Like, did you read many comics in your, like, ages... you know, when the show came out, we were like 8 or 9 to
I wasn't a comic book fan.
Right. Okay.
I'm still not really a comic book fan.
Well, let me put it to you this way.
I would watch the shows, but mm-hmm. like I didn't really have any friends that watched the shows, so I didn't really have anybody to talk to about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was really impressed with you. You read your first like complete graphic novel you finished the other day.
Yeah.
We've mentioned it on many podcasts in a row now, but The Silver Surfer by Dan Slott and Mike Allred. Yeah. I think I finally got their first names right. I saw you read the whole thing, so from 8 to 10. So that in itself is an accomplishment. But let me ask you this question. If you saw another girl in those age groups reading a comic book, how do you think other girls would have responded, like positively or negatively?
In the 90s?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It depends on like where you went to school and who those right. girls were. You
so
know?
You can't like even make like, a bold statement about it.
It's not that I wasn't reading them because I thought it was too nerdy or something like that. I just like, I don't particularly like the form.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
I prefer to read. Well, I mean, I was a bookworm when I was a kid, though. Yeah. So like I was reading books all the time. And like,
I'm just like thinking about, there's obviously tons of women who, when they were young, read comic books.
Yeah.
But it's just not something that's ever, like, I feel like it's more, it was like more of a secret activity, just because I never saw it. And in pop culture, they never would show a girl reading a comic book, I don't think, that much.
Back then.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah, but I think so it's not existed.
Like it didn't happen. Right, yeah, it's not like it didn't happen. I just wonder, like, if you were a girl who liked comic books, you know, if you just read them alone in your room and didn't talk to, have anyone to talk to about.
Maybe you had girl friends that were also into comic books. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, and the only thing I, like, and the first thing that jumps to my mind about girls reading comics is, like, complete, like, just, like, the shitty ones, like, not even from the era we were from. Uh-huh. Where I'm sure there's probably a lot of good feminist comics or just, like, comics with like good female characters.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of like the 1940s and 50s mm-hmm. when if you were a girl and you wanted a comic book, it's like, oh, here's Lois Lane, the comic book.
Yeah.
Where, you
well,
know.
That's why like Archie comics were invented, oh, yeah, right? Like yeah. For like the female audience. I don't know. To me, comic books are pretty annoying to read because like it's mostly graphics, like it's mostly pictures, so you think you're going to be able to read through it really quick because there's not that mm-hmm. much text on each page, and you're like, oh, I'm going to be done with this in like an hour or something, right? You're like going to speed right through it, but like it actually takes a long time for your brain to absorb all the information from those pictures. You have mm-hmm. to really like study it because it's yeah. important for the plot line,
yeah.
and it's not like an hour long breeze through quick read. Yeah. It's like a real, like, in-depth kind of reading experience.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, especially the one that you just read, the Silver Surfer one, I mean, that was really complex.
And I'm not
and
saying
dense.
That's bad yeah. at all. I totally understand why people like it, but I personally find it tedious.
I know, I watch you read them.
You know what
and,
I mean?
And your face crunches up. But you did like the Silver Surfer one, though,
I mean,
right?
The story is great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but that's the thing. That's why I was, like, you know, a 90s kid watching, like, this X-Men cartoon and the Batman cartoon and mm-hmm. the Spider-Man cartoon, like, all of that stuff, like, was a lot more digestible to me.
Yeah.
As,
oh,
like,
absolutely.
A TV
yeah.
show. Or if there had been, like, a novelization that was really, really good that I, like, that someone gave me or I came across as yeah. a kid, I probably would have liked that. But
not like a novelization of the X-Men world, if it was, you know, because they have that stuff too, where
yeah,
it's like they write a book instead of a comic about the characters,
right? Yeah,
so that
like, as a kid,
been,
I
right.
probably would have been into that.
I hear you.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, like I could like say, oh, you don't. I could get like on a soapbox and say, oh, you don't get comics and whatever. But when I was those ages that you were too. I wasn't reading that many comics either from the standpoint of, like, yeah, I'd go to the comic book store on the weekend and I'd get them. Mm-hmm. But more often, I would get, like, the Marvel trading cards mm-hmm. or things like that. Because as a kid, it's, like, way too much to understand. Mm-hmm. You know, you're watching the X-Men cartoon at home, and it's kind of simple, and they explain the origins of things, and they give you, like, a rough summary of what the X-Men are like. Mm-hmm. But when you go to the comic book store in 1996, and you see there's, like, 12 X-Men comics on the shelf, and they're all, like, in the middle of insanely, like, 40-year story arcs.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
And it's also, like, got, like, kind of adult themes where the characters are, like, really overly sexualized and crazy-looking, and the action's, like, super intense. For a 12-year-old, it's, like, cool on one level, but another level, you don't get it. And it's, like, hard to jump into. And that's why I think a lot of people are like me in the sense, if you were a young, like, geek or nerd, you like the idea of comics as a young person, like, an adolescent, right?
Okay.
But then you can't really follow it. But when you get older into your college and into your 20s, you start to, like, you get curious again, and you go back, and that's when you can, like, you might make, like, your rediscovery of comics, because as an adult, you have the ability to comprehend it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a young adult anyway, and like that's what I did.
But also as an adult, it's like you have a lot more resources. You know, when you're a kid and you're looking at like how many decades of runs of all these comics, and you have like $2 in your pocket, and you're like, damn. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I remember like going through. I liked the old X-Men comics more than the new ones because they're simpler and they explain the origins, right?
Yeah.
And believe it or not, they had them at the comic book store, either in like a collected graphic novel. Or, you know, like a Marvel Masterworks. Yeah. And I had a few Marvel Masterworks, which were my favorite ones. But, or you went to the comic book store and they had, like, the old issues, like, in a box with, like, dating back to the 70s and stuff. But they're expensive. I mean, you can't, like you said, you can't afford buying, like, the first, like, five issues where, you know, Kitty Pryde appears or something. I mean, you can get in the Marvel Masterworks, which would have to be like a Christmas or birthday present, because that was probably like $20 or whatever, $25 bucks or something at the time. But as a kid, if you wanted to seriously collect them, I don't think it'd be hard. And you wouldn't even know where to begin. Like, you'd need like a Wizard magazine to like get you started. Yeah. It'd take a lot of research and a lot of homework. And by
times
that point,
without internet,
right? And
you know?
Yeah, exactly. And by that point, as a kid, like you're like, all right, I'm just gonna buy a pack of baseball cards and
call it a day.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, and I'll spend my next $1.75 next week on something else.
Yeah.
So you're right. So as a little kid, it's really tough.
I mean, people did it, obviously. Just like we were not.
Yeah, you have to be really like hardcore into it. I mean, and that was the other thing too. It's like the nerd culture in itself, or the geek culture, is intimidating for little kids too. In that sense, it's like you'd see the guy who's ever like running the comic book store probably was like an 18-year-old nerd himself, or even like an older man, like in his early 30s. And it's just like it's like going into a record store with a bunch of snobs working at it. You'd like that you can't. They don't want to talk to 12-year-old kids.
It's just this like infinite universe of knowledge that you haven't even scratched the surface of. Like, how are you going to?
Yeah, you don't even want to talk to them. It's too intimidating. So it's just like, and at the same time, that's kind of good too, because it'd be kind of creepy if they were like the Candyman from Willy Wonka. He's like, let me put a comic in your hand, little boy. You might like this one. You know, that would be like inappropriate as well. You know what I'm saying?
What?
You know how the Candyman...
What road are we going down here?
I'm just saying, you know how the Candyman and Willy Wonka is just, like, giving the kids, like, chocolate bars and really, like, getting down on like, his knee?
I don't think that would be creepy at all if a comic book store owner said, oh, here, you're not a comic book fan yet? Try this one. And like, that would be totally appropriate.
That's
how they run a business.
In my experience, that's not what they were like. They're just...
No, they're, it's not what they were like.
They're, like, sardonic adults
either,
that,
but,
you know, had issues. So this guy, there's this guy who's like this classic 90s nerd, and he's in some cave somewhere discovering the Ruby of Sidorak and its ancient tablet. And this we discover is what gives the Juggernaut his powers. As the Juggernaut reminds us in this episode, as he did in the first appearance we saw him, he is not a mutant. He gets his powers from magical sources.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the many fun sort of like secret things about the Marvel Universe. It's not just all like characters like this and that. There's all sorts of like magic stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Juggernaut's case. So this guy, he finds the Ruby of Sidorak, and he, you know, at some point, and it hasn't happened yet, but at some point he reads the ancient text, which says, "Whosoever possesses the sacred gem shall receive upon himself the crimson bands of Sidorak. Read these words and leave this place a human juggernaut." That's not exactly the quotation. I just kind of scribbled it as he was saying it.
Mm.
But so it's just one of those ancient things where they made it as easy as possible, as long as you could read like the ancient like Sumerian language or something, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Here's some magic powers, stranger. Enjoy. So that's essentially what happens. This guy, he steals the Juggernaut's powers just in time too, because the Juggernaut was invading Professor X's mansion yet again. It's always like curious to think like what the Juggernaut's doing in between the times when he's not all steamed up about his stepbrother,
mm-hmm.
Professor X, and like invading his mansion to kill him.
Yeah, like what's his day-to-day life?
Yeah, it's just like it's just confusing, you know, because I don't know, I guess he gets thwarted by the X-Men at times, then he just like
retreats.
He retreats and goes about, like,
where,
until he reminds himself that he's angry about it again.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the last time we saw him, he was in the whole Phoenix saga with his friend Black Tom.
Yeah.
And he got thrown off Muir Island by by the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Or no, by Gladiator. Gladiator was the one who, like, flicked him off the island.
Right.
So, I don't know. Like, he's up to, like, no good. I mean, like, in the comic books, he's kind of like a... When he's not dealing with the X-Men, I think you get the impression he's, like, a bank robber or just a criminal.
That makes sense.
Roustabout, you know, uh-huh. doing crazy schemes. And then at some point in the comics, he becomes a good guy. I don't know what that transformation was all about, but I just know that it happens.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, anyway, you know, like we said, this episode, it's, like, not, like, much happens. Juggernaut loses his powers. He's the X-Mansion. He's in the Danger Room at the time, and the X-Mansion kind of collapses on him. And because he's lost his powers, he's in critical condition now because he's buried under some rubble. But as we know, in the X-Men universe, being buried under, like
mountains and tons of rock and yeah, concrete,
it's not instantly fatal.
No.
Although they do, although interestingly enough, it almost does kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But like before that happens, we see some fun stuff. We see the Juggernaut punch a shark.
He saves a seal.
Yeah, there's a cute seal swimming around with the fish in his mouth. He doesn't save the fish, but he does save...
He does save the seal, though.
Saves the seal, which is cuter. And he punches a shark. He's under the water. He's, like, in the Hudson River somewhere in New York City. And then he...
Shark-infested waters, yeah, apparently.
He leaps onto... We couldn't figure out what bridge it was. I think it was... It's either the Manhattan Bridge or...
Maybe the
Williamsburg Bridge.
I don't know.
He's, like, trying to get to upstate New York, so... I don't know why he's in the water in the first place, and then... I don't know. The way he roams around the world is very strange, because that once he's on the bridge, he's only there to steal a car. So he rips open a taxi cab and, you know...
Jumps in there.
Somehow could support his weight, and he mm-hmm. could drive it. And the police are after him, and, I don't know, he just easily gets away from them, and... It's just a bizarre scene that he was... I guess he just realized, I'm going too slow here. So...
Lumbering along the bottom of the river was not the way to go.
Did he just come from... Like, he was in Ireland the last we saw him, so did he just walk across the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah, maybe.
Because he can't... You know what? He can't fly in a plane.
No plane can hold him?
Well, I don't know. He can't fly in a commercial plane, definitely.
No.
As we see in this episode, being the Juggernaut is very challenging.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, he might be able to fly in, like, a military, like... aircraft or something. I mean, you know, that's what must be. Like, he can't, if he wants to go from Europe to America, unless he gets on a boat. He could definitely get on a boat.
Yeah.
Of some kind, like a big
ocean. But he can also just walk across the bottom of the ocean, right?
Yeah, but that's like, that takes a lot of energy and time.
He's got time and energy.
I guess he does. I mean, but at the same time, it must take months to walk across.
Yeah, that's true.
That many.
Anyway, here he is. He resurfaces. He's trying to get to the X mansion.
Right. He wants to kill Professor X. He hates his stepbrother, and we'll find out why. Professor X sends out the beacon to his X Men. Jubilee's at a pool party.
Uh huh.
She can't be bothered.
Her communicator is on her chair by the pool, and right. she's not.
Probably for the best that the 15-year-old Jubilee doesn't confront the Juggernaut again.
Yeah, but it's funny because we've had all this conversation around the X communicators and like yeah. where they're located, and yeah. it's her belt or something, right?
Yeah.
Like that she'd have to be talking to.
Well, it's not consistent because the belt they show is this standard X-Men belt that Cyclops might wear, a yellow one with the big X in the middle. But yeah. Jubilee doesn't wear that belt that
no.
we can see unless it's underneath her pants.
Huh. Anyway.
Yeah, so there's that. Then Gambit's on the side of the road. His communicator...
is also the belt, but it's on his motorcycle, and he's, like, across the street
with his trench coat off. A school bus that's
broken down. School bus
it's too hot of a day.
He's really a good Samaritan.
Yeah, he knows. I want to see that episode. What is Gambit doing that he... First of all, how does he know
how to... He's doing good deeds.
I know, but how does he know how to fix a school bus?
His mechanic past.
I guess. No, I don't think he has him. He's a thief. He's not a mechanic.
Who knows?
Right. I mean, all the X-Men are very technically minded somehow.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse us. We're a little tired. A lot of yawn breaks here. And then we see... but Rogue and Storm are an environment that we've seen many times. They're in the mall.
Again.
Shopping for new wardrobes.
Yeah.
And they're in some new clothes, which is cool.
Uh-huh. Storm has a green outfit now.
Yeah, and Rogue has her own sort of green outfit, but she quickly changes into her regular green outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Storm's got, like, this cool, fancy new green outfit. Like, lime green outfit with this brown leather coat. But does she have, like, an X-Men collar on?
I don't know.
I think I noticed that. But just thinking about it now, she's got this weird X-Men collar, and I think it even lights up and talks. So she's
Is
really
that her excommunicator?
Yeah, I don't know. She's really accessorizing.
A necklace excommunicator?
Yeah, we've seen some like new exciting outfits from Storm this season. So don't know if they were trying to sell some new action figures or what, but...
This is why you had all the X-Men trading cards. You didn't care about the comic books. You just wanted to see what they were wearing.
I don't know. You're right. There's something so, like, interesting about the way they look to me. I was always, and I'm still fascinated. And it does... Yeah, right. And on some fundamental level, talking about the movies and stuff, it's like it always bothers me, like, the way they look. I always want the look to be just right. Yeah. I'm still waiting for that in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And so, so we only get like a partial X-Men team, which is good enough. The best X-Men anyway: Storm, Rogue, Cyclops, and Wolverine. Later on, mm-hmm. Jean is still recovering, I guess.
Yep.
But so Juggernaut's invaded the X-Mansion. We see some X-Mansion security measures. They've got machine gun, like laser machine gun turrets in the front lawn, and electric security nets and things of that nature. But none of that can stop Juggernaut. He just barrels in through the mansion in the front door, and then he jumps into the basement, and he lands in the danger room. And Professor X sets some interesting holographic traps for him. Mm-hmm. The first one, he puts him in a jungle, and he has him fight, like, 10 other Juggernauts. Mm-hmm. But they all turn out to be wimpy robots that he can easily manhandle. But then we get a really awesome cameo from our pal the Hulk.
Yeah.
The Incredible Hulk.
In a desert scene fight.
Yeah, with a torn-up outfit. Although the Hulk looks kind of, like... sorry, real tired. The Hulk looks kind of, like, he's too puny-looking. He was about the same size as the Juggernaut. And I know the Juggernaut is big, bigger than the normal character.
Yeah.
But still, the Hulk, I think, would be a little bit bigger than the Juggernaut. At least the way I imagine him.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong there. And I'm sure the Juggernaut and Hulk have squared off many times in the comics. I have no idea, like, who can... beat up who. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine the Hulk is like the strongest, but
yeah, but this is a robot.
Yeah, oh yeah, he takes care of the robot, but it's still, it's cool to see the Hulk in the X-Men universe. I didn't remember that at all. And then it's right around this time that the nerd guy steals Juggernaut's powers, so now he's just Kane Marco. We see him in a military outfit, which they don't explain in the cartoon, but that's from the comics. Mm-hmm. I think in the comic book origin of the Juggernaut, he finds the Ruby of Sidorak because Kane Marco's fighting in the Kreen War. And I think Professor X is also a Kreen War veteran in the comics as well, too. Hmm. And they might have actually been fighting in a similar platoon or something. Something crazy happened there. Please correct me about that. But I think they're both Kreen War veterans. And that's when Kane Marco discovers the Ruby of Sidorak. So does that make the Sidorak thing a Kreen artifact of magical power? It doesn't sound like it.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But anyway, so we see him in his military gear. He's in a coma, though, in the X-Mansion. And Professor X, the whole hinge of this episode is that he has to make the ethical decision. Do I let him die, or do I save him? And the only way to save him is to get his powers back. So I think that's, like, a pretty good, like element to explore for a kid's show. Professor X basically saying, like, listen, like, he's an evil guy. He's done nothing but try to kill me. You can see how dangerous he is, yet even still, I respect life and I have to save him.
Yep. That's like the X-Men mission there.
Right. And all the X-Men are pretty much against it.
Yeah.
Storm, Rogue, Cyclops, and Wolverine are stunned, shocked, and appalled that Professor X wants to save this guy.
Yeah. But then Beast points out, well, he is his brother.
Right. And Storm comes around, too, at some point, because Professor X has a breaking point where he realizes, like, maybe I shouldn't save this guy. And Storm reminds him, no, you must, you know, save him. Don't let this, make you unethical or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess he's doing the right
Rogue
thing.
Well, Rogue tries to rebel. She's like, this is crazy. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, and Cyclops and Wolverine, too. They also are not
happy
about it.
Yeah, but Professor X is the one that, like, turns it on them. And he's right. Like, listen, this is not, like, an optional thing. Like, this is a direct order. Like, you must go help him.
Well, that's how he feels at first. Like I was saying, then he changes his mind, then he changes his mind. Okay, so anyway. But that's, like, the ethical question here. I actually disagree with him.
You think he should have just let him?
Yeah, he lost his power. He came to kill him in his house. It's Juggernaut's fault that the roof collapsed on himself. And then, by the grace of God, he loses his powers at that moment. That has nothing to do with the X-Men. Mm-hmm. And now he's just dying in a coma. To me, that's a fitting end for this monster. That abused power that he didn't deserve to get in the first place, used it for all the wrong reasons, has led a miserable life that has caused countless, like, destruction and probably killed lots of people. He does not deserve to live, and this is like...
Wow, harsh.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like he lost his powers fairly, and you know, like, so be it. This is his fate.
Uh-huh.
Why is it Professor X's? If I was Professor X, I wouldn't go out looking for this, like, impossible to find Ruby of Sidorak business.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually amazing that the X-Men track it down.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, I mean, you disagree with what I'm saying?
No, I gotcha.
I mean, would you let him live or die in that moment if you're Professor X?
I think for Professor X, it's like he sees the solution, you know? Like, right. If Juggernaut hadn't lost his powers at that moment, he was still in, like, grave danger, and there was nothing to do about it, you know, then Professor X might have been like, all right, well, there's nothing we can do. But, like, because the situation is such that, like, it's possible to save him, even if it means going to a lot of trouble and effort, then he feels obligated to do it. So...
I guess, you're right. So because he sees the way to save the guy, he'd feel like a murderer if he didn't do
it. Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, but to me, the circumstances are just so insane, because the only way to save him is to give him the immortal, infinite powers of an unstoppable juggernaut.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would just say, like, this is your fate. This is the path you chose. Oh, well. You know, you're an evil son of a bitch. You're basically a Nazi.
Ruthless.
Okay, well, whatever. So, but in the meantime, in order to figure out how to save him, he must travel into Juggernaut's mind. And here's where we see the backstory between Professor X and Kane Marco.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're stepbrothers. Kane Marco's dad married Professor X's mom, who was a widow for her wealth. And Professor X never knew that as a kid, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, really hurt to learn that the dad also was a bully, like Kane, hated Professor X secretly, thought he was a wimp, and didn't care for his mother, even though his mother loved Kane Marco's father, Senior Marco. I forget his real name.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like Bolivar Trask from the earlier, from season one, this, like, black mustachioed man with some gray hair and, like, a long white lab coat.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, like, an evil scientist, too, in the comics as well. Yeah. I think that's what's going on. But anyway, you know, they summarize it pretty short and sweetly by just saying to this guy, listen, like, you have to be nice to this Charles kid, or else we're not going to inherit this fortune, and therefore I'm shipping you off to boarding school, and you're a shitty son to me. And that's why Kane hates Charles so much, because he thinks Charles is to blame for, like, his father not loving him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's kind of actually, you know, he's got his own little...
That's an interesting backstory.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, maybe not deserving enough of having to kill Charles. It's like, there's something wrong with Kane that he just blames it all on Charles, not his dad.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. And then we see more of the backstory where... Kane would push Charles into mud and make sure all his friends, like, hated him and knew he was a mutant and stuff, and made sure that his beloved Sandra hated him too. And we see Professor X's powers awakening at times as a kid, and it's tough for him. He had a tough childhood.
Yeah.
But still, he looks like a real ninny boy. Just something really, very, I don't know, dandy.
Meek.
Yeah, meek and dandy-ish about him.
Uh-huh.
As a young lad. There's more to it in the comics, too, which is funny. They show more of this backstory. And this is, like, the classic 60s comics. They show Professor X was, like, a star athlete and really popular in high school and stuff,
uh-huh.
even though he was bald at a young age. Which they explain, too, for something inexplicable, why he's bald. I forget why. But, like, you know...
They explain it with something inexplicable?
Yeah, I forget. Like,
something unlikely?
It's maybe just because he's a mutant. That's why he's bald, you know? Or maybe he just went bald as a teenager. I mean, that does happen to some kids.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, in a way. The thing was, there's a lot more jealousy from Kane Marco, from Professor X in the comic. And here it's more about, like, father issues.
Right.
So all these revelations really hurt Professor X. So that's when he has his moan of weakness, where he feels like, maybe I shouldn't save this guy because this stuff really hurt me as a kid. I thought I was long over it.
Mm.
But whatever, Storm convinces him not to. And then what else happens? Oh, then there's, like, this nerd man now has Juggernaut's powers.
Right. That whole transformation is crazy because you actually see the power itself leaving the Juggernaut's body. It's this red energy stream, and it, like...
The power of a red ruby in energy form.
Right, yeah. How literal.
Yeah.
But then when it goes into this nerd guy's body, like, he gets the Juggernaut's outfit along with it. That's, like, part of the energy stream, I guess, along with the helmet and everything.
And he still wears his glasses, which is funny.
Right, yeah.
But then, like, the glasses are underneath the helmet. So he goes back home to his apartment, and it's a disaster being the Juggernaut. You know, he opens up the fridge and the fridge door comes off. He tries to drink some water and his sink like explodes in his face. And
he tries to stomp a roach or something on the ground and he like goes through the floor.
Yeah, so it's not, but he doesn't seem that upset about it. I would be extremely upset.
No, he doesn't seem upset at all. He like thinks it's cool.
Yeah, which is crazy because I would be like, oh my God, this is my life now. I can't sit on my couch without falling through the floor. So I don't know.
But he like sees a way to use it to his he thinks it's he's going to use it to his advantage where he like goes to some nightclub and tries to like impress a bunch of women with his strength. And, like, it doesn't work, really.
Yeah, not right away. It's kind of inconsistent, because at first he's a freak and people are afraid of him. Yeah. But then later we see him in the episode, he's actually quite popular, and people are enjoying it.
He's really wearing dancing the night away.
Yeah, he's wearing his John Travolta Saturday Night Fever outfit,
right, which is ridiculous. So I guess the outfit that came with the Ruby Stream can be changed.
Yeah, that's exciting to discover that he was able to take off that, like, skin-tight metallic juggernaut armor. Thank God, because it looks like it's bolted onto him.
Yeah.
You know, with those, like, studs around.
Yeah.
You're like, how do you take
really
this off?
It's really riveted.
Yeah, I mean, the helmet we know can come off with and it takes Juggernaut effort to take the helmet off, too. The guy, the new Juggernaut, he has to really yank it off.
Yeah.
And he's got enormous strength, so that costume must be really difficult to peel off your body.
I guess. But anyway.
It reminds me of a comic, too, like a really early Jack Kirby Stan Lee comic. There's a mutant called Unum the Untouchable. I think that's what his name was. It's spelled like U-U-N-U-M or something. I don't know. Anyway, his power is that, like, nothing can touch him if he doesn't want to. So, like, he goes and robs banks and police shoot bullets at him and they just bounce off. And, like, people try to pick him up, like, they just bounce off. So, you know, he's super powerful in that sense. He can do whatever he wants because nobody could touch him. He's the untouchable. But then the way the X-Men defeat him is Professor X makes a machine that increases his powers by, like, 100%. And at first, Unum thinks this is like, oh, thanks for, you know, making me more powerful, Professor X. See ya. But it turns out it's a curse because he can't, like, eat food anymore because he can't pick up fruit and vegetables or whatever. And he can't, you know, drink water, and it's torture, and he's going to die.
Yeah.
So he has to go back and plead with Professor X to get his power, like, reduced or, like, taken away from him. And that's the lesson. So I feel like there's parallels going on here.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, too much power. It also, like, reminds me of something I always wondered. You know, like, this guy, it's hard for him to interact with everyday objects, this Juggernaut, and I always wondered, especially watching Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, the worst Christopher Reeve Superman. It's and I might have mentioned this on the podcast before, there's a scene where he pushes the moon, right, with his bare hands. He's that strong that he can push the moon out of orbit.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder how, when he's at the Daily Planet, how he can pick up a pencil and write things down.
Well, but he's had that power his whole life, so he's used to being able to control it. I think that's the thing with this new Juggernaut guy, is that he doesn't know his own strength.
Well,
you know, it's like a toddler. Like, they're not, like, in full control of their muscles, and they don't know what they can do, really. So they end up, like, knocking things over and falling over because they're not, like, their brain hasn't caught up to their muscles yet.
But even still, like, it seems like the classic Juggernaut, the Kane Marco version, still just bumps into stuff and doesn't have...
But he does destruction on purpose.
He does, but at the same time, it seems like it's not easy for him to have fine motor control. I don't think he could, like, pick up, like, a pen and balance his checkbook if he wanted to. You know, Superman, like, my only point about that is that he has a real insanely fine degree of motor control. That his hands can either, you know, like, pick up a pen and write with it, or somehow lay his hands on the surface of a celestial body and push it.
Yeah. But the Juggernaut also is enormous, so maybe if you give him a really big pen, he'd be able to balance his checkbook.
Well, that's no solution. He needs to go to, like, a magical powered big and tall store.
He could be writing those enormous checks, like, when you win the Publisher's Clearinghouse.
I mean, obviously, that's where this new Juggernaut went. He went to some big and tall store and bought, like, an outfit. They were able to clothe him.
Yeah.
Which is funny. We don't see that scene. So anyway, it's up to Cyclops and Wolverine to deal with this guy, and it's kind of like a joke. They easily dispatch him, and they steal the ruby from him, and they bring it back to Professor X, and Professor X gives it to Kane Marco, and in Kane Marco's mind, he recites the magic words, which he's remembered, and he turns back into Juggernaut. And then there's a cool scene when he awakes. He doesn't kill the X-Men. He realizes that, like, hey, I owe you guys one, at least. He doesn't say it. But he takes his ruby gem, and he throws it through the roof of the X-Mansion into outer space.
You see it twinkle in the distance.
A satisfying red twinkle, because it's a ruby.
Right.
It twinkles into the into the solar system
somewhere.
It's
just, like, his reasoning is, like, I'm never going to let anyone get their hands on this again. This is going to be my power forever. forever, and then he, like, flings it. But from what we know of the X-Men universe, nothing is safe out there in space.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think that maybe one day, maybe he'd want to retire from being the Juggernaut at some point. Mm. I don't know if you can undo it without someone just taking the power from themselves.
Yeah.
It's not like he could say the thing in reverse and lose the power. But my point is, like, I don't know if I'd still want to keep that ruby on me.
Right.
I don't know if I'd want to throw it into space where nobody can get it. Like, maybe keep it for myself and hide it where no one could find it.
Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Because you never know. It's like the Shi'ar might come across it or something. Or
you might need it yourself.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it's crazy. And, like, you know, the other guy found it in the ancient ruins of where the Juggernaut found it originally, too.
Right.
So, you know, that it was, like, easier to find in a sense. So, mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying. Juggernaut could hide it in a safe somewhere and bury it in, like, Antarctica, you know?
Yeah. Like, Antarctica?
Antarctica. Right, exactly. So, you know, and in the end, Professor X, he lets him go. He's like, Wolverine's like, should we stop him? Or Cyclops says that. And Professor X is like, no, let him go. He is, you know, we'll fight him another day.
Yeah.
But I think that's super not appropriate of the Professor either.
You want better closure than that?
Well, he's just unleashed this monster on the world again. Like, he can't... It's up to him. It's one thing to save his life. It's another thing. Now you have to keep people safe from the Juggernaut.
Right. You have to, like, rehabilitate him.
It's like at the end of X-Men Apocalypse, the movie, where Magneto, at the behest of Apocalypse, like, destroys half the world with his magnet powers. And at the end, Professor X is like, oh, good friend, see you next time.
Mm-hmm.
And just lets him leave. Instead of, you know, like...
apprehending him in some way.
Yeah, or, like, brainwashing him to make sure he doesn't do anything violent like that again.
Yeah.
I mean, something, you know? Like, Magneto's a dangerous criminal.
Right. So you think it's irresponsible of...
Yes.
Xavier.
While you got the Juggernaut there, you know, do what you did in the first time we saw the Juggernaut. Knock his helmet off and brainwash him so he doesn't remember who he is, or, you know what I mean? Something where he's, like, a good guy.
Yeah.
So I think that's the insane of the Professor, just to let him go. And not a good neighbor either, because the Juggernaut's just lumbering out of the mansion at a very slow pace.
Right.
He's going to be walking around...
wherever it is he's going.
Yeah, Westchester and Salem, like, causing a whole bunch of mayhem for Professor X's neighbors.
Yeah.
So not very neighborly.
Well...
yeah.
I don't know.
But overall, a fun episode.
Yeah, it was a fun episode.
Oh, there's another cameo I forgot to mention. Like, at one point, the other Juggernaut crashes through a studio set, and they're filming the Power Rangers.
Yeah, that's right. Which is, Banzai Entertainment Studios, yeah, or something like that.
Right, yeah. A subsidiary of Saban, which controlled funny. Power Rangers, too. So a real, like, silly plug for the other property controlled by Saban.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that's all I have on this episode. Oh, and in the end, when the nerd guy loses his powers, he's not that upset. He gets a hug from a pretty woman at the nightclub.
Yeah.
And he passes out because he's such a nerd. Like, he's never been touched by a woman before.
Maybe.
I guess he jizzed in his pants. you know what I'm talking about? The Adam Sandler SNL sketch, that song he does with Lonely Island. Uh-huh. Never mind. People know what I'm talking about. I'll show it to you later.
Okay.
So that's that for that episode. So I thought a fun episode. I was entertained.
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah, a nice return to form, a classic season 3 episode. Not bad at all. Good animation, good cameos, good backstory, fun time was had, like, watching it and making fun of it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not that we're here to make fun of all the episodes, but, you know, sometimes you can't help it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so what? Any last words on this one you have?
Nope.
Would you want to be the female Juggernaut if you got that Ruby of Sidorak?
Nope.
Would you give it to me and ask me to become the Juggernaut?
No. I would throw it into space.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, only to do that, you'd have to turn into the Juggernaut first.
Oh.
You'd be in a lot of trouble.
I'd be in a lot of trouble.
All right. You just have to make sure no one gets their grubby paws on it.
Yeah.
All right, so Gem of Sidorak, not that interesting, really, to possess. So that's all I got for this week. So let's do our goodbyes. I would like people to follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. If you're on Twitter, you can see me like a bunch of random things, like political tweets and tweets about Halt and Catch Fire and tweets about Mets baseball. it's really worth it to follow me on Twitter. You could also follow us on Facebook at the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. That's more important because you can interact with all our fans and yell at us or tell us about, you know, the name of Juggernaut's dad, who I can't can't remember, and like what he was up to as a secret scientist, and interact with everyone else. That's more important than following me on Twitter. Although I do love the social media power that I get with every new follower. Just kidding. Sonia's looking at me like I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. And then what else can you do? You could rate us 5 stars on iTunes if you're an Apple user and leave us a nice review.
What else can you do?
Listen, everyone needs to help us, okay? There's a lot of problems in the world, but we need your support in the form of Twitter followers or X-Men Taz, Facebook fans, whatever it takes.
All right, let's close this up here.
All right, that's enough. So until next time, when we will march towards the end of season 3, that's all I got this evening. Sonia, do you have any final words?
That is all. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.